Now, from the Casey's General Store Studios in Des Moines, Iowa, it's the pulse of amateur and Olympic wrestling.
This isn't just something where we're going to talk about it, so giddy up.
This is Takedown.
Good morning, wrestling fans. Saturday morning here. Takedown Radio in the Casey's General Store Studios. It's the open match. Takedown Radio brought to you by Fairway Food Stores and Pure and Clean Sports. You can listen to us anywhere on the go with the iHeartRadio app. Just search KXNO 1460. Today, you can join in on the conversation with Michael Harvey, myself, and Brad Johnson on the Fairway Foods Fresh Hotlines, 866-333-5966. Again, that number is 866-333-5966. See if we can maybe take some callers today with some questions, looking back at the year, maybe looking forward. So you can call in and chat with us if you want, or we will we'll be having a giveaway around 9:35, 9:40 here this morning with some Nike Hyper Sweeps, Adidas backpack, and the Defense Soap travel kit. Due on the show, we have got, kicking off the show, is Mason Beckman, George Mason, assistant coach. Then at 10 o'clock, we will have Chris Bono, Wisconsin Badgers, talking about his first year at Wisconsin. And then we've got Joey Edessa up at 10:30 a.m. here. He is an odds maker for wrestling. You've been able to actually gamble on the sport of wrestling for over 5 years now, and Joey's been the guy that's been setting those lines. So we're going to talk to him a little bit about where, you know, sports betting and wrestling has gone, and where the future maybe lay. Because I think with the UFC and obviously the tie to wrestling, I think there's going to be some crossover and some possible ways to funnel some money into the sport through legal gambling here soon in Iowa, and maybe some around the country. It's getting more and more popular. So, all right, let's kick off the show. Let's hit it up, Mason Beckman. Man, you got to follow this guy on Twitter. He's fun to follow at Beck_diggity on Twitter, so give him a follow. But Mason, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Yeah, appreciate the Twitter shout out. I actually got into quite the Twitter conversation this morning, so through the phone.
What do you got going on today?
It's actually kind of related to the recruiting thing. There was a conversation. It initially started with a quote tweet of Kyle Kretschmer's, to which a former teammate of mine, Ryan Price, responded, and it was about basically that, you know, Penn State has won 8 of the last 10 titles, I believe it is. And, you know, Kretschmer being an Oklahoma State guy came from the perspective of Oklahoma State is still the program in the sport historically, which statistically it is. And Price responded basically saying that as long as Kale and company stay together, that they're going to be hard to beat. And I brought up the topic of how RTCs and the money that comes through RTCs that gets doled out in the camp systems has skewed the recruiting landscape. And then, I didn't really think about some of the people that follow me before I hit send, because there are a lot of Penn State loyalists that follow me. And I got down quite a rabbit hole with that the last couple of hours trying to explain my point.
Yeah, I mean, I think anytime you mention a team, or, you know, it's everyone points to Penn State. Everyone wants to know how the heck they're getting it done. So I think they're the obvious target. But there's other programs out there too that are pumping a lot of money into the RTCs, and it always kind of worries me a little bit of, you know, what's going on behind closed doors. But I want to, you know, the reason why we had you on the show, the reason why I saw an opportunity here, is many coaches don't really talk about this publicly. It's kind of, in wrestling, it's kind of been behind closed doors. We just sweep things under the rug. But you had a tweet that said, illegal recruiting is an issue that needs addressed immediately in the world of college wrestling. The system as it stands is completely broken, and it's bad for the sport. So, you know, you tweet that out. Where did that come from? I mean, was there, did you guys lose a recruit? You know, give our listeners a little bit of background of kind of where that came from.
It was kind of a straw that broke the camel's back situation, to be honest. You know, it's something I've been aware of since my older brother got recruited. You know, my brother's 4 years older than I am, and he went through the recruiting process. And I learned a lot through his process, you know, and a big part of that was the rules, right, and what coaches and programs are and are not allowed to do, and how many workarounds exist, you know, some within the rules, others outside of the rules. So it's always been something that has bothered me. You know, the decision that I made to attend Lehigh and wrestle for Coach Santoro, one of the main reasons, to be honest, was, you know, they recruited me really hard, but they stayed within the rules without question. You know, there wasn't any gray area or anything like that, and that meant a lot to me. So it's something that's always, you know, with the way that I was raised and, you know, the way my parents and my coaches have always handled me, staying inside of the rules, staying inside the lines, always mattered to me quite a bit. You know, you want to win the right way, right? So, you know, there wasn't any one specific event. I know a lot of people point to a certain, you know, individual changing their mind, but that's truthfully not what set me over. It was actually a conversation with a friend of mine that is coaching at another Division I program, that we ended up on the phone for probably 2 hours about all the things that we've seen over the years. You know, and I'm young, right? I'm only 26, but all the things that we've both seen over the years that go on that nobody talks about, and the culture that exists within our sport to not report things, and the reporting system itself. And that's what I was referring to being broken, because the reporting system is broken. Nothing really happens. When programs do get reported and are black and white guilty of a violation, it's left in the hands of the violating program's compliance office. And more often than not, for one reason or another, you know, I don't know every situation. Obviously, I don't know even, you know, a quarter of the situations, right? But what happens a lot is that the compliance office, you know, gives them a slap on the wrist or calls the coaches in and has a conversation with them or something to that effect instead of, you know, real legitimate, I don't want to say huge sanctions, because I'm not saying that that's what, where somebody should go right away by any stretch, but there's no real repercussions for it, right? They get a slap on the wrist and they just kind of keep it moving and nothing really changes.
We're talking with Mason Beckman, assistant coach at George Mason. As he said, he did wrestle at Lehigh. He's a two-time All-American, now is in coaching. So you were having this conversation. Did you guys, you know, was there a recruit that was committed that you lost due to, you know, somebody going behind closed doors, or how, what was the specific violation that you thought that a coach was, you know, illegal recruiting, I guess?
You know, truth be told, I don't really want to get into specifics of individuals or programs. You know, I would rather keep it more about the culture of our sport and the things that we need to be better with. You know, right or wrong, I just am not of the belief that throwing names and slinging mud is the right way to handle it. You know, we've reported the people that we know for sure have done things that aren't within the rule set. You know, and I'm no Coach Beasley, you know, and the rest of our coaching staff, we're no crusaders. We're not vigilantes to go outside and go on a smear campaign or anything. And I know that's not necessarily what you're asking me to do.
Yeah, no, I don't really necessarily need to know the coaches or the athlete that was involved. You know, so many times in sports, really in wrestling right now, we've seen these, you know, freshmen and sophomores, you know, they'll verbally commit. Or, I mean, we have even some that, you know, have signed their NLI and they all of a sudden, you know, they flip their commitment. You know, maybe they were like a lower tier ranked wrestler, and then they, you know, they got better, they had bigger accolades, you know, their sophomore, junior, senior year, and then they flipped to maybe a bigger program. And I've always, you know, no, that's not the kid's fault, I don't think, but if you have an NAI signed, you know, coaches aren't supposed to be in contact with them, correct?
Correct. As long as it's an institution that, from my understanding of this, as long as it's an institution that uses NLI, so use the, say, the Ivy League, for example, because they don't do NLIs. So an Ivy League, by rule, doesn't have to stop recruiting someone because they sign an NLI. I'm pretty sure that that's the rule. Obviously, I've never worked nor attended an Ivy, so that's not something that's been directly in my sight line. But the vast majority of the time, yes. Once a recruit signs an NLI, it's over. The recruiting process is over. Any form of contact, you know, unless a coach has a pre-existing relationship, with the kid. You know, like some of the guys that I used to coach at the Quest School of Wrestling back in Pittsburgh, you know, I still keep in touch with them just because, you know, we have a longstanding relationship and it has nothing to do with recruiting. But the recruiting process is supposed to end as soon as the NLI is done.
So my comment is...
Turn your mic on. Nope. Still okay. Good.
I'm on the road. Okay, you're good. There we go. All right. I was like, I hit power like six times. There we go. So I know, like, you have the verbal commitments, and I know, like, people want to make, like, a... Like, this is a big deal. This got verbal to our school, but I've kind of always been in the mindset that because verbals are just, they're not binding at all, I've almost wondered, we've sort of over-celebrated that at times, and they can always change. So how do you balance that? What do you think?
So as a college coach, this is going to get into a little bit more theory, right? But as a college coach, we are in the business of educating kids, of educating young adults. You know, we enable them to attend institutions, right, where they get their formal education. And we're mentors. We're coaches in far more than just wrestling. So it's on us to help teach our student athletes, you know, morals, ethics, and life lessons, right, that they should hold to. And we're trying to develop young men of character. So when you talk about verbal commitment and – you know, this actually just happened to us. We had a recruit verbally commit to us, announced it publicly, and he told another program, you know, when he contacted another program that had been seriously recruiting and that they had been recruiting him and that he had taken a visit there. So he contacted them and said, hey, I really appreciate it. I've made my decision. I've committed to George Mason University. And the response was not, you know, for us, when a recruit tells us that, we wish them the best of luck. We tell them if for whatever reason anything changes to let us know. But, I mean, we cease contact at that point because they've made their decision. And in this case, the response was to drastically up the athletic scholarship offer and everything. And I believe the quote was something to the effect of, well, no, don't do that. What if we gave you a full ride? So, again, back to my initial point about, you know, teaching student athletes and teaching these guys the right, you know, teaching them right and wrong. What are we teaching young adults? What are we teaching the student athletes that come through our programs? What are we teaching recruits? If we hear all the time in life that your word is your bond, right? I'm sure all of you have heard that. You know, I know it was beaten into me by my
word is your bond. A man's as good as his word. If you don't have your word, you don't have anything. All those things, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. I mean, those are tried and true. And there's a ton to be said for them because that is the case. So what are we all teaching young adults, you know, and I mean, hey, 17, 18, 19, 20, like that's obviously an incredibly important developmental part of your life for anybody. What are we teaching if when somebody commits and somebody publicly states that they are committed to something, to then say, well, no, it's okay to go back on your word if something bright and shiny comes along. It's okay to bail on the people, on the program, on, you know, on the people that have committed to you, that have put time, effort, and everything into you, if something that you perceive to be better or something that other people perceive to be more noteworthy or however you want to put it, right? It's okay to just completely bail on a decision because something maybe a little prettier comes along. I mean, hey, it's the exact same thing as, you know, it's a funny example, but it's the truth. It's no different than that exact same lesson would translate to you're dating a girl and you see another girl, you know, another girl says hi or whatever.
And she's cute.
When your girlfriend's not around and you think she might be a little bit prettier. You know, you've been dating this girl for however long, right? You're committed to her. But you see a girl that's a little bit prettier, so, my girlfriend doesn't matter, right? That's the lesson. And is that something, is it within the rules? Yeah, totally within the rules. Totally within the rules. But what are we as a sport and what are we as coaches teaching recruits and student athletes?
Yeah,
that's what we're doing.
I think it's just a different culture now, and it's quickly changing. Brad, you had a follow up with that?
I do, and I agree with everything Mason's saying, but at the same time, Mason, we see coaches leave for better opportunities all the time, so there's a point where we're holding kids to a different standard than the people who are coaching them.
That's true. I mean,
yeah,
if a coach leaves, he should, you know, no institution should require that person to stay. Like if you sign and you're there, and if they want to go, you should let them transfer. I mean, that's pretty shady if a school did that. I see your point, Rad. You know, that does happen. It doesn't happen in wrestling as much, right? But the other sports, I mean, guys are one and done, and, you know, 2-3 years, football and basketball, they're gone. So, yeah, what are your thoughts on that, Mason?
You kind of hit the nail on the head for me. You know, I know that there are cases every year, right, of a high-profile recruit, or any recruit, doesn't matter if they're high-profile or not. They sign an NOI, and they're headed to a school, or they get to a program after a year or two, and the coach leaves. And I'm fully on board with you guys. And the new transfer rules with the transfer portal and everything has changed this drastically. So now it's definitely a case where student-athletes can leave and can transfer much more readily. There's not nearly the kind of fight that there used to be with getting releases and that sort of thing, right? But I'm totally on board with, If a recruit, you know, so say when we got here to George Mason, you know, and obviously I got here a year after Coach Beasley did, but if we were to have all gotten here together and there were recruits that had signed their NLIs here, they are more than what, I mean, I'm sure what would have happened, you know, knowing Frank and knowing our entire coaching staff, we would have had a conversation and said, hey, we would love for you guys to stay. We will honor it. You know, you signed your letter. That is what the program offered to you. But if you do want out and you want to change your mind, because obviously the situation has changed, the situation that you committed to has changed, then you are more than welcome to leave. We will do anything that we can to help you. So I completely see where you guys are coming from with the coaches can leave, come and go as they please. I think that the way the rules work now with transfers, I think that those rules have leveled that out a lot more. And I don't think anybody will ever fault a recruit or changing their commitment or where they want to go to school, you know, even if they signed, if their coaching staff changes, you know, because obviously you commit to the university and to everything, right? But a huge part of it is the coaching staff. I mean, you spend a massive amount of time within the program with your coaching staff. So, I hope that kind of answers your question.
Brad, do you have a follow-up on that?
Not on that. Whenever you guys are ready, I want to talk more about George Mason, what you guys did this year. I know you guys got a lot of support from the school. I just want to see how the year went when you guys are done talking about it.
Well, we can go to that. I think it's just a really interesting topic to be able to get a coach to, you know, that we're openly talking about, that these things are actually happening. But before we go to that, Brad, so I just, a theory here is, you know, coaches are seeing this are happening to them, and at some point, like, it happens once, okay, no big deal, but if, like, the same thing happens maybe with the same school, you're like, come on, dude, like no, this is BS, and, you know, are people actually, the big problem is that you said, like, the compliance departments within the university is the one reviewing this. They're not going to do anything, probably, especially if they're winning. So that is scary. But do you think some other coaches aren't reporting some violations because they don't want anybody, you know, digging in their backyard?
1,000%. Absolutely no question about it. I think there are two reasons, you know, in large part that are what lead to coaches not reporting violations. One is exactly what you said. They don't want people poking around in their program. And I think the other one is that, you know, our sport has at times struggled to keep programs afloat, right? We've seen, you know, with Boise State and Eastern Michigan and everything, and we've also added programs, you know, what's going on at Little Rock, at Presbyterian, at LIU Post. It's awesome. But we've had a lot of programs drop, and ones that were fairly high profile. So one of the things, the big arguments I've heard against reporting is that it's bad for the sport, because if it's a school where maybe wrestling is an afterthought, which let's call a spade to a lot of athletics administrations, we are. And this wrestling program gets reported violations that, you know, whatever level of severity, that an administration is more likely to look at it and go, well, what are we doing having this sport anyway? All they do is cause us problems. They're violating all the time. And if they keep this up, they're going to bring sanctions down on the athletic department. Heck with this. We're going to cut this program. And that is a pretty common thought process amongst, you know, and I know that that has been explained to me by multiple coaches that, to my knowledge, have never violated. Certainly not knowingly. You know, we all make mistakes. I mean, everybody makes mistakes, right? I mean, sometimes you do call a kid that has an NLI signed, and they mention that and go, oh, man, I'm sorry. I apologize. I had no idea. Best of luck. And you hang up the phone, right? Honest mistakes happen. But, yeah, there are coaches that are adamant about following the rules that don't want to report others for that, you know, that reason I just explained of they think it's bad for the sport and they think it could potentially put a program in danger, especially when you talk about, you know, maybe an underfunded program or, you know, a program that exists in a huge athletic department where if they cut wrestling, it's kind of whatever because they have football and basketball or whatever else to keep everything afloat, and wrestling is just an Olympic sport afterthought.
Does the transfer portal help a school like George Mason or hurt?
You know, I think it goes both ways. I think it can help a smaller program because you do have situations where at these Power Five, high-profile programs where you go 2, 3, 4 deep of guys that could be top 15 guys. And, you know, eventually, just law of averages, some of them want to leave because they want to be the guy. So they go in the transfer portal. That happens, without question. It also happens when guys go places, they have negative experiences, whether, you know, the culture's different than what they expected or, you know, what have you, right? They just have bad experiences that result in them leaving. And they can do that uninhibited because there were definitely programs that blocked transfers every time. So it helps a program like a George Mason in the sense that guys will leave those big programs because they have the opportunity to be the guy elsewhere. Flip side is there are definitely situations where a guy goes to a smaller program because they didn't have the opportunity to go to a Power Five or, you know, a top 10 program, right? And they go and they have success right away. And then they start to look around, whether it's them, it's their family, it's, you know, their high school or club coaches or, you know, whatever leads to it. But that they start to look around and wonder, man, if I can do this here, what could I do at Penn State, Ohio State?
Yeah.
Iowa, Oklahoma State, right? The traditional powers, you know, Michigan, North Carolina State. I guess NC State's not a traditional power, but they put themselves in that conversation. So, I definitely think it goes both ways. But at the end of the day, I think it definitely benefits the student athletes because it enables them to do what is best for them in their career.
I think that's the as a fan, you look at it and that's the positive takeaway from that is the kids can actually go where they can go, but I can definitely see how, you know, this could be a sticky situation for some coaches to be in sometimes too. Cause I've talked to some D1 coaches and there's a lot of gray area in some of this recruiting stuff. And it's kind of scary. I mean, if I'm a program, right now you almost kind of feel invincible. With RTCs, we know that at the NWCA meeting, they were talking about, you know, coming down a little bit harder on the RTCs or make clear rules for that.
Yep.
You know, for George Mason, you know, with Beasley coming in, you know, where your guys' regional training center, all that aspect, how is that going for you guys? Do you struggle, you know, in certain areas, or what do you guys have to do to put in place for that to be a success for you too, like some of the Power Fives?
So we have an RTC, you know, it's certified and everything else. You know, we run RTC practices basically, you know, all year round when we're allowed to do so. As far as resident athletes goes, that's a continual fundraising effort. Matt Voss, our, you know, fifth year senior heavyweight that just wrapped his career up. he wants to stay around, you know, so there's an ongoing conversation about how we're going to enable him to do that. So, yeah, it's definitely something that we're in the building process of, and the way that Coach Beasley views the RTC, and, you know, you saw this at North Carolina State with what their staff, how they built the Wolfpack Wrestling Club and their RTC. We want to use it to enable the student-athletes that come through our program. We want to keep our best and brightest home, so to speak. So when somebody comes through our program that, you know, succeeds at a very, very high level and they want to stay to continue to chase the dream, and that they're able to do so, right? And that's the way that we view it, and that's the way we're going to continue to build it. There are always challenges, right? Fundraising is a perpetual thing, not just in our sport, but in college athletics. That is the name of the game. You gotta knock on doors, burn up the phones, and do all the fun stuff to build the relationships, to get people invested in your program in more ways than one. But on the whole, it's going really well. You know, our program has already come a very, very long way. We did a lot of things this year that we haven't done in 20 years, if ever. You know, we had more wins at the national tournament this year than we've had since 2001. And that was the same case last year, and we won more matches this year. So, you know, the last 2 years have really been exciting. I think the growth has been very apparent. Went from 4-13 last year, dual meet wise, to 9-7 this year, the first winning season in 11 years. First time ever that our program beat Edinburgh in a dual meet. So that, you know, there are a lot of things that are really exciting for sure. We're growing fast and yeah, you know, so everything's going well. Every program has its challenges. Everybody has things that they can gripe about, that they can complain about. But at the end of the day, the rules being what they are, you got to make it happen. You know, do I think that there are rules that can be adjusted? You know, you mentioned RTCs and how they affect recruiting. You know, I said that's what the Twitter conversation I was in today about. I think that, and you mentioned the NWCA meeting. One of the longest standing, most successful coaches in the history of college wrestling in that meeting was the biggest advocate of it, hey, we need to have oversight into how money from an RTC gets funneled to student athletes, you know, and it's through camps, which is completely legal, because you establish a going rate for your camp, and that's what you pay the individuals that work your camp. For some of these RTCs that have seemingly bottomless pockets, the going rate can be whatever they want it to be, right?
Yeah.
So when you've hit your 9.9 athletic scholarships, you can do it through the RTC. And that, again, that's completely legal. There's nothing against the rules.
Yeah, you get a college kid making 20 grand at a wrestling camp. That's not bad.
That's where I'm going to work.
Yeah,
right?
It's not a bad rack. And hey, don't get me wrong, man. I'm all for college kids making money. Believe me, I live that life. I'm all about it. I ran around all over the country every summer running camps, paying rent, and, you know, getting some spending money to save up to buy the truck I now drive. So, I'm all for college kids getting paid, and, you know, that you can get down that rabbit hole of being able to make money off your likeness. Like, beyond idiotic that college kids can't do. You know, I mean, if somebody wants to pay, you know, Jason Nolf and Bo Nickel however much money to come take a picture with their kid or show up at somebody's birthday party or, you know, I mean, whatever, right? Whatever it would be, they would be able to do that. They made it happen, man. But that's obviously a different conversation. As far as the RTCs go and with the camp thing, I do think that needs regulated because it has so drastically shifted the way the recruiting happens, because you always have the have and the have-nots. That's just a fact of life. None of us are strangers to that, but the whole reason that 9.9 athletic scholarships, that limit exists, is for competitiveness, right? And I think that even if you're a Penn State fan right now, I think everybody at their core would agree it's more exciting, it's more fun when the team race is a knockdown, drag out, you know, race to the finish, right? When you have, I believe it was Oklahoma City in 2014, when going to the finals, you had Oklahoma State, Penn State, and Minnesota all still within a few points of each other. I'm sure you guys were there, but, you know, I still remember, and it's little funny stuff like this that, you know, cool memories that result out of team races like that. And, you know, I mean, we weren't in the team race to win it or anything like that. But Robin Ficker, the guy that used to be the Maryland heckler, Minnesota needed Jimmy Sheptock, who wrestled for Maryland, obviously, to beat Ed Ruth for Minnesota to win the title, or to have a shot to win the title, right? So I'll never forget Robin Ficker showing up at the very bottom of the Minnesota section, which, you know, is basically like a tent, like a full massive section in the lower bowl, and leading the whole Minnesota section in the headlock Sheptock dance, you know. And those kind of funny little things are what come out of those exciting team races, right? It's fun for everybody. I'm kind of, if you're a Penn State fan right now, you don't want anything to change. And I wouldn't either.
Right, right.
But yeah, again, the 9.9 exists for competitiveness, for the betterment of the sport. And I think that the way that you can totally legally pay kids that camp money through RTCs right now has, so tilted the scales so heavily.
So can a coach say, like, hey, you know, we don't have a scholarship available for you, but we'll have you work our camps, and you can make, you know, $20,000 if you're an All-American, you make $50,000, I mean, just throwing numbers out there. Is that something that a coach can say? I mean, I feel like that's a violation.
But so you got to be really careful with exactly what you say and how you say it. So, again, you have to establish a going rate, which is what you pay everybody. It doesn't matter if you win 4 national titles. It doesn't matter if you're the 4th string 25-pounder that mops the mat. If you work the camp, you get paid the going rate, which is established by whatever organization runs the camp, whether it be the university, the RTC, the club, you know, whatever. You can't tell a recruit that flat out, I don't believe so. I'm not rock solid on this. For full transparency, but it's all in the wording of how you say it. You know, you can say something effective. Hey, you know, everybody that wrestles for us, has the opportunity to work our camps. And, you know, last year we paid X amount per week, you know, and so that's something that everybody has a chance to do. You know, you can't necessarily I don't believe that you can promise a recruit anything in that nature. But you can get your point across without violating, for sure.
Yeah, so that athlete is going to have to trust that coach that is going to come. But that can easily be kind of, you know, hey, just go talk to this kid, you know, see his paycheck he got this summer. Anyways, all right, so that's it's unfortunate that's happening, but, you know, hopefully some people, you know, whoever it is, I'm sure there's multiple people out there, and there's always a gray area, right?
For sure.
I think it should be, you know, if there's illegal recruiting happening in basketball or other sports, like, I feel like we know about it. Like,
there's no doubt that illegal recruiting is not a college wrestling problem. It's a college athletics problem.
No, but to correct you, and I'm sorry, Tony, I think we know about illegal recruiting that's going on, but we do not know nearly in any sport that you want to look at, football, basketball, wrestling, whatever. We don't know about a lot of it. There's a lot of it that gets filtered through other hands and that you don't know happens.
Well, it gets filtered through the university. The university handles it, but, like, you know, I'm hearing, you know, we're having problems in basketball and all these other sports. And when was the last time you heard a recruiting violation in wrestling, Harvey?
Yeah, I can't tell you.
I mean, that hasn't been, like, behind closed doors and, like, you know, just, you know, in wrestling, it's like everything's a secret. Like, coaches don't want to talk, and it's just.
Hey, you can't even report anything without just pissing somebody off.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. That's what I love about the sport, is it's such a close-knit thing. But if you say anything bad about a program, I mean, you're, like, basically kind of X. You know, you're out.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I know of a pretty hilarious situation where one coach reported another. For, you know, reported another program for very clear recruiting violation. And the coach that got reported, the next time they wrestled in a dual meet, was trying to fight him in the parking lot. That's a real thing.
That's only in wrestling. Right. All right, one last thing here. I know you. So we're talking with Mason Beckman, assistant coach George Mason, wrestled at Lehigh, and had a little bit of time coaching at high school. But I want to chat with you a little bit about PA Power. Do you miss being in the media grind with guys like us?
I do. It was super interesting, man. You know, to see the other side of the looking glass, and I got more heat on Twitter in that year or two than I have in the rest of my life combined, which is saying something because there were a lot of people that weren't really a fan of the way I wrestled. So, it was super interesting, you know, and I never, and don't get me wrong, it's not that I was ever a guy that, you know, as an athlete that ever thought like, oh, the media's trying to screw me or whatever. I mean, I've developed some friendships with a lot of you guys from different outlets, and very appreciative of everything that all of you do for the sport, the exposure and everything. But going through it, I completely understand how precarious it is sometimes that what you say and how you cover things can be taken any one of about 1,000 ways. So it was super interesting to see that side of it. I really liked it because I felt like my perspective was a little bit different as somebody that had just gone through it, you know, and I could, that's actually how I kind of got into live tweeting wrestling events when I was, you know, when I was removed from college wrestling for those 2 years. I did it once. I don't remember what the first one I did it with, but I had multiple people, you know, one of them was somebody that works at Flow, reached out and in the middle of me live tweeting all this stuff, which was literally just me sitting on my couch, or on my buddy's couch, actually, just tweeting whatever came through my brain, at least about wrestling. There's a lot of other stuff that goes through my brain that I'm not putting on Twitter, but...
your drafts folder is just completely full of just tweets that you want to put out there.
Random stuff.
At least mine is.
They don't call it a filter.
They don't even make it the draft, man. I don't even remotely let that happen.
No, because one day you might accidentally send them or something.
Yeah. I would. I sent around a fire last night, and I was just looking through your Twitter feed, and I looked through my drafts, and I'm like, man, I had some pretty hot takes, but they were in my drafts. I can't say everything. But all right, Mason, I appreciate your time coming on. We took you a little bit longer than I expected, but you brought it today, so I appreciate you spending 40 minutes with us.
Thanks a lot, Mason.
No, I appreciate it, guys. Anytime. As far as it's taken a little longer than expected. I think anybody that knows me knows I love to talk, but that's not surprising.
Come back on during the season. Let's talk about your team this year, okay?
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to. You guys, DM me your address. We'll get you some George Mason gear out there as soon as possible.
Okay.
We need it for the new set.
We
man.
Do.
Hook us up.
Yeah, for sure.
You got any bobbleheads, Mason? You guys do any bobblehead
yeah.
nights?
we need a Beasley bobblehead.
I think we all need a Frank Beasley bobblehead.
Yes.
send me a shirt, I'll rock it. I'll say George Mason has other sports besides just basketball. So
alright, give him a follow at Beck Diggity. George Mason just had their best season in 11 years. Frank Beasley at the helm. Bunch of new coaches there, and something, you know, don't sleep on George Mason. Gonna take a little bit of rebuilding, but I expect to hear more of Frank Beasley and company here in the
let me throw one thing out before you guys take off on me. I have to mention the entire staff. You know, Frank gets a ton of credit, and as he should. I mean, he's the leader, he's our captain, he's the man. And, you know, maybe the best coach I've ever been around at any stage of my life. But our entire staff, Cam Effort, Bo Donahue, our strength coach, John Delgado, who wrestled here at George Mason, and our athletic trainer, Justin Fegley, and everybody that surrounds this program, they all do an incredible job. You know, our hashtag is Be Uncommon, and every single one of those guys knows how to be uncommon. And I know for me personally, I'm incredibly fortunate to work with all of them. And I've learned something different from everybody. So I couldn't get out of here without mentioning every single one of them and thanking them for all that they do. And it's a family. And it's, like you said, it's a building project, but we're doing it together. And we have a ridiculous amount of fun doing it.
Hashtag be uncommon. All right, that has been our first segment of the show. We'll be back after the short timeout right here on Takedown Radio.
1460 KXNO.
There's a reason people keep coming back to Casey's General Stores. Maybe it's because we've been serving communities like yours for over 50 years. Maybe it's the smiles and friendly conversation you'll find here. Or maybe it's because we continue to spend the extra time preparing our made-from-scratch pizza the way you want it. Right now, get a large Supreme pizza for only $13.99. Casey's, famous for pizza. Not valid with any other offer.
Adidas. More takedowns, more doubles, more singles, better performance. Today's new Adidas wrestling shoes build on history with an eye on the future. Lighter, faster, better. Adidas Wrestling is all in. Adidas Wrestling, available at leading sports retailers.
From the beginning, Defense Soap's number one mission has been to protect wrestlers from the harmful effects of skin funk and mat grime. Now, with the addition of our Defense Antifungal Medicated Bar Soap, we carry that same commitment to protect you from fungal infections like ringworm, jock itch, and athlete's foot. Defense Soap is the world's most respected hygiene product for wrestlers and the official soap of the National Wrestling Coaches Association. Learn more about Defense Soap and how it can help you at DefenseSoap.com.
Hi, I'm Jeff Murphy, Senior Vice President of Sales at Kemen Industries. We're ready to expand our family of innovative, talented, and driven employees for our operations here in Des Moines. We have immediate openings for production operators, including positions in packaging and mixing. Candidates must have a high school diploma or the equivalent, a good attendance record, basic computer knowledge, and be able to move up to 50 pounds. Previous manufacturing or industrial experience is also preferred. Openings are available on 12-hour day or night shifts, with some 8-hour shift positions available as well. Kemen offers competitive wages and a full benefit program, including health, dental, flex spending, 401k, and a bonus program. If you're interested in improving the quality of life around the world, become part of the Kemen family. Go to kemen.com/jobs. Again, that's Kemen, K-E-M-I-N.com. Kemen, using science to improve the world.
Wow, I just needed a drink of water after that Mason Beckman interview. Man, that was great stuff, dude. I mean, what's scary about that is, you know, how deep that it really goes, these illegal recruiting violations.
That's a good song, by the way. I thought he was going to come back with the Chili Peppers song since we're about to do the giveaways.
Yeah, I always wonder, like, what goes through Brad's head when he's picking these songs. Like, So, Chili Peppers the theme song for our giveaways? Is that what
we're
doing?
The whole title of the song is "Give It Away, Give It Away."
Ah,
yeah,
okay.
Gotcha.
Yeah, all right. Okay, I gotcha. All right. Now, so let's do the giveaway then. All right. Call a Fairway Foods Fresh Hotline 866-333-5966. Call now to win a pair of Nike Hyper Sweeps. First caller wins. Next in line, fight over the Adidas highlighter, yellow backpack, and a Defense Soap travel kit from our friend Guy Seiko.
So, Tony, we did on the show last year. You remember the kid Tristan Wills, the kid from Kansas that won the state championship, and we announced a couple months ago that he won his second state title this past year in Kansas. Well, he was telling me he got hyper sweeps from us before last season. He wore a different set of shoes in the finals, but he said the Hyper Sweeps are one of his two favorite pairs of shoes, and he wore them for a lot of his matches this year. So, they're on the feet of not only him, but lots of champions all over this country. So, Hyper Sweeps are worth picking up.
They got two new colorways. They got a black and gold colorway, and then they've got a red and white colorway. So, Grant Turner, if you're listening, I need a red pair of Hyper Sweeps. So, we were supposed to get sushi on Friday, but it didn't happen. So, all right, we've got about 10, 15 minutes here before the top of the hour before we have to get to another break. So, if you were listening here in the first hour and you have, you know, any 2 cents in regards to recruiting and this whole camp situation, I have heard of this happening. This has been kind of last 3 years. You know, I hear more and more people talking about how athletes are getting promised that if they, what I was told is, you know, if you're an if you become an All-American, you're going to get a certain amount of money at this camp, or you're going to be invited to be kind of be a part of the camp. And if you're not an All-American, then you don't get any money. So it's a little bit of a risk for an athlete that, you know, probably could get a scholarship maybe somewhere else, you know, if a school is out of those scholarship money.
But I think also it depends on where you fall, right? So let's say we talked about this transfer portal, right, and how you can transfer. So let's say, I don't know, you go to a smaller school, like, say, at Kent State or, we could say George Mason, anywhere like that. You become an All-American or you're right there on the verge of something like that. And then a big-time program that, say, is right there in the top two or three or feels like they're a guy away and your weight class just happens to be that hole. You know, maybe if they don't have those scholarships available or as much available, maybe that's, you know, something that tempts you to get there. Maybe, you know, those competitive juices are flowing. You're like, oh, so if I get All-American, I can work these camps and I can still get paid. And then you feel like you got a chance to go be a part of a championship program. Like, we talked about that transfer protocol hurting in one way or the other, but I think, you know, this is a way that kind of all of that gets sort of linked together, right?
Yeah, we just live in a kind of a crazy world right now, where kids are committing earlier and earlier, and it's just, it can hurt a program if they flip, because you already feel like you've got your guy right at that weight class, and what's happening is coaches are, until they sign the dotted line, they have to keep recruiting. Honestly, well, from what I've been told, you know, schools have to actively recruit that weight class though, because that kid might flip, and then you got kids recruiting over kids, and that kid's like, well, crap, like,
this kid's going to this school. I said I was going to go here, but I'd really like to go wrestle with these guys, and like, I respect these guys, you know, wrestling wise. So maybe I verbally committed to Oklahoma State, but God, like, look at all these kids that are going to Penn State, you know. So I'm going to go there. And sometimes it's – a lot of times it even hurts more these mid-level programs, right? These top 10, 15, these programs that are on the verge of getting up into that upper echelon. You feel like some of those programs are going to be okay either way, but still, like, there are holes in weight classes even with really good programs. Ohio State had a couple of holes this year, right?
Like, yeah. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how this transfer portal – I mean, Seth Gross – is in the transfer portal. You know, there's obviously been all kinds of rumors. We've got Chris Bono from Wisconsin. I mean, I think when we first heard the transfer portal that Seth Gross was going to transfer, that was the obvious choice. But we're not going to talk to Chris about that. But, you know, he could be a coach that could benefit from, you know, him coming over. But
he got Connor Brown, right? Like, the 25-pounder that he had at South Dakota State. I wonder if the guy got hurt, because I think they had the Rotunda kid wrestling at Big Tens and Nationals, but he did get one of his guys from South Dakota State come over with him, and that was a transfer portal thing, right?
I can't remember, honestly. I can't tell you. So Connor Brown. I wonder what we'll have to find out what's going on. I can't remember if he got hurt or what. But
you're right.
Yeah, he did get hurt.
The interesting piece, I mean, you mentioned that. So for people that follow other sports, for example, my favorite college football team was recruiting one quarterback, and he was the one in the class. He had committed 2 years earlier. A month before signing day, he flips, right? Like, so same in quarterback on the football team, 149-pounder on the wrestling mat, right? Like, it's the same concept. You have a guy at a position, you think you got him, and if you stop recruiting that weight class until you got that NLI and until you have this kid signed, sealed, and delivered, if you don't continue to stay on top of it, you know, you may create a hole for yourself, and that could be the difference in being on the podium or not as a team in March.
So we got our giveaway. Are they all gone, Bradley?
I have a Defense Hope travel kit left.
All right, let's get this gone here. Call the Fairway Foods Fresh Hotline, 866-333-5966. Get a Defense Soap travel kit. What's up?
Don't forget, Tony, offense wins championships, but defense keeps you on the mat. So you need this.
Yeah, every day, too, we're doing a Defense Soap mat fact on our social medias at Open Mat. You can give us a follow on social media. And it's got a little, you know, a quick little tip about how you can keep yourself on the mat using Defense Soap products, obviously. But just, you know, even if you, the simple thing is, you know, cleaning down the mats on the outside of your wrestling mat. Like, I think in high school, I don't remember us ever cleaning the wall mats. But those get just touched and wrestled on as much as the mats do. I mean, not as much, but plenty of sweat and grime is on that. I mean, you go back and you sit on your back on the mat when you're, you know, relaxing. So that stuff just needs to be cleaned, man.
And they probably get ran across more, even like when people are kind of skirting through the gym area or through the wrestling room area. Like, you probably have even more foot traffic on those outside mats than you do in the middle, too.
All right, so we're talking with, you know, George Mason, Mason Beckman. If you missed any of that interview, the podcast of the show will be up immediately at theopenmat.com or your podcast-friendly apps. You can just search Takedown Wrestling Radio. iTunes definitely will have that right away, so you'll want to look for that. I think we're going to start breaking these up on our iTunes podcast where you can just listen to each individual interview. The whole show will be up on the podcast, but we're going to individually break these up. That way, if you only want to listen to Mason Beckman or Chris Bono, you can do that. So look for that in your iTunes, subscribe, and get this show right away if you're on the go. We have Joey Edessa at the top of the second hour, Michael, and talking about betting on sports. And this weekend, man, the Masters are on. I've been hearing just tons of people like throwing some crazy numbers out there of odds to win. Do you watch the Masters?
So I follow the leaderboard, and I respect the game. I personally, like, I just can't sit and watch golf on TV. But I do follow the leaderboard. I care to see how it goes, and I appreciate the sport and the skill of it. So, like, I watch it. I think, you know, you mentioned sports betting. I think when it comes to golf, like, I think that has to be, in my opinion, one of the hardest sports to bet because of the variables of it, right? Like, unless you're talking about like mid to late 90s in Tiger Woods, like there haven't been very many safe bets in majors. I mean, if you could pick 3, 4, 5 guys maybe and say, okay, I'm going to lay some money on these couple of guys or whatever, then maybe there's a shot. But just because you have so many people, there's only one division, right? Like, so many people competing for the same prize. And I think the difference in winning and being like way down in the pack sometimes in golf can be razor thin.
Well, what I think, it as far as what I've heard from Masters betting, I guess, is there's matchups. Like, you can do the win, odds to win, which are like just crazy odds because it is golf, right? There is tons of factors that go into it, but there's trends. Like, Tiger Woods plays really well at Augusta, so you know. But there can be a guy like, you know, Spieth, who just kind of goes off the rails and you put money on him. But you can do matchups. So, like, Tiger Woods versus Phil Mickelson. It doesn't matter if they win or not, but as long as they finish higher than them, you can gamble on it. But where I'm going with this is there's people that are watching golf just because they put $50 on Tiger Woods because Tiger Woods is fun to watch. So in wrestling, prior to, you know, this last year, you could only really bet on the NCAA championships, and that brought in some fans. But now you can do every single weekend almost, and I feel like, you know, like this weekend in golf, like, all these people are able to, you know, put like $10 on Tiger or $100 or whatever, you know, whatever floats your boat, and you watch that championships. Like, wrestling could have that opportunity where we have some crossover, maybe some UFC fans, if they can bet on it. I mean, let's be real. Like, it's, you know, everyone's like, oh, you know, gambling is this big bad thing. Well, it's going to be legal in almost every sport. And I think it could bring some eyeballs, even if you don't even care about wrestling. But if you can gamble on it, dude, we're going to get some fans to the sport.
Yeah, because, I mean, there are a lot of people in the sport that are gamblers that probably, I would say, enjoy the bet or the rush that goes on winning and losing and the action even more than they do the sport. But they're pretty knowledgeable about it because maybe they bet on it, you know, on it for a while. So I think anything that you can do to drum up interest, because to me, like, whether it be betting, whether it be this or that, the more conversations had about the sport, the more it starts to get attention and the more even people who maybe aren't better start to notice or whatever. They hear conversations about it and whatever and drawn to the sport. This sport has to continue to, sports betting is one of them, but we need as many hooks as we can, right, to draw more people into it.
We do. And Joey Edessa at 10:30 Central Time, roughly, we're talking about him. I mean, he's been setting these lines since 2012, maybe even earlier than that. But that's kind of when I knew that this was going on. Bradley, you know, as far as a media side of thing, I mean, do you think, you know, with fantasy football and basketball and baseball, like, is there an untapped market as far as, like, a media side to be talking about, you know, gambling on wrestling?
I don't know, man. It's a little bit different than football. Individual sports worry me a little bit with the gambling aspect, because you got a poor college kid going out to wrestle, and he can kind of determine what happens all by himself. So, sketchy territory.
Yeah, especially if you get, like, start getting duels, right? Like, and if you're doing spreads or over-unders, I don't know if you can do those at all, but, like, you know, you could just sit a kid out that was expected to get a six, and now, you know, the spread, like, completely changes.
Well,
so,
you know, think about, was it Ohio State, Wisconsin? You had a couple of backups. I mean, there was several duels that involved Iowa last year where we didn't see guys that we were expecting to see, and so you get up with a lot of duels, and we talked about that, and even Jeff Murphy said during one of our Kimmon reports this past year, he's like, this is one of the things that I think is going to make wrestling tough to bet on, because what if a thing's sealed and whatever else, and it makes a difference? And I said it kind of is the same way sometimes in, say, college football, for example, with point spreads. Like, if you're way ahead in the fourth quarter and you decide to start pulling your starters and putting in second and third string, but it's, I feel like wrestling, it's even trickier at times. So I kind of agree with that.
All right, so top of the hour here, we had Mason Beckman on the first hour. Then we're going to have Chris Bono here at 10 a.m. This commercial break is powered by Pure and Clean Sports. You no longer need to use harsh chemicals to protect your athletes from infections. Check out pureandcleansports.com to learn more. We're going to be back after this short timeout with Chris Bono, Wisconsin head coach, right here on Takedown Radio.
From the Casey's General Store Studios in Des Moines, Iowa, it's the pulse of amateur and Olympic wrestling.
This isn't just something where we're going to talk about it, so giddy up.
This is Takedown.
Welcome back to Takedown Wrestling Radio. Today you can join in on the conversation with the Fairway Foods Fresh hotline, 866-333-5966. It looks like it is going to clear up. Perfect time to get out there and start grilling. Right now, Fairway's got a two-day sale that they're finishing up. You can get $7.99 a pound whole boneless ribeyes, or $2.99 pound bacon, or $6 for $10 Roma pizzas if you don't feel like grilling out and just chilling inside watching the Masters. All right, here on Takedown Wrestling Radio, Tony Hager here at the helm, Michael Harvey, Brad Johnson, as always, behind the clicker. We are going to be joined now by the Wisconsin head coach, Chris Bono. Chris, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. How you guys doing?
Good. I mean, is there ever a time that you guys just sit back and just kind of relax a little bit? I mean, I feel like you guys are some of the hardest working D1 coaches out there.
Yeah, well, we're trying to accomplish the goal, you know, and we're far away from it, so there is no time to rest, you know. There's always some recruiting to do, always trying to get kids better, and, you know, always trying to figure it out, so. We're off and running, and we're going to keep running until we accomplish our goal.
Coach, how you doing this morning? Nice to talk to you. I talked to you when you first got out there. When you first got to Madison, you said that you enjoyed the city, really vibrant. You like the atmosphere out there. So you've been there for a full season now. Do you enjoy it more? What are your impressions of Madison after being there for this entire season? And what are your thoughts just on that area?
Yeah, it's an incredible place. You know, I knew, you know, first of all, wrestling side of things, with being in the Big Ten and the possibilities and the administrative support was unbelievable. But now that I'm here, I mean, I'm realizing what a great institution this school is and what it has to offer academically and what the city has to offer, you know, everybody. And, you know, the outdoor living is unbelievable. And, yeah, I'm loving it more and more every day, and it's an unbelievable place for sure.
Let's talk a little bit about this season and kind of look at that and then kind of reflect on this next season to come. So this year you had, you know, your heavyweight looked pretty good, had some big wins for you. You had Tristan Morin come in from Oklahoma State. Talk to us about some of your guys and just sort of hit some highlights for us from this past season.
Yeah, you know, it was an up and down season, but I think overall it was status quo. You know, we didn't do anything real spectacular, but we also didn't fall on our faces, like I've been telling everybody. You know, two All-Americans, Evan Wick and, you know, Trent Hilger as a freshman, you know, and Tristan Moran was in a round of 12 for us. You know, you got to remember when you get to a new program, you know, we probably didn't start really developing our guys, you know, until, you know, October of that year. You know, so we only really were working with them from, you know, once we got to know each other and understood everybody's, tendencies and work ethic and things like that, you know, for 6 months. You know, now that we're here, the program is, the foundation is laid. Everybody understands expectations. I think next year is going to be a bigger and brighter year for us. You know, we get a ton of national, tournament points back. And I think it's going to be great, but overall, you know, for just jumping in the program, changing the culture, you know, and then heading, you know, before we knew it, November was here and we were competing, and, whether we were prepared for it or not, you know, we had to wrestle the season, and, you know, we're excited now to, you know, train these guys here in the spring and then get ready again to, take on the season next year.
What was, the biggest thing you took away from this year as far as what you learned about Wisconsin wrestling?
Well, that the support is huge. The state is unbelievable. You know, you talk about college wrestling, but this state loves wrestling. You know, from every corner of the state, you know, the support has been unbelievable for us. You know, and I didn't really understand how big high school wrestling was here in Wisconsin. We recruited it a little bit at South Dakota State, but the wrestling here is unbelievable. The kids are great. The high school coaches are great. The club coaches are great. Everybody wants to see the University of Wisconsin be great. And that's something that we really taken away. And, they've really embraced us and accepted us as a staff and new people. And, we're just excited about, you know, recruiting Wisconsin kids and getting them here to, you know, wear that W on their chest.
How many conversations have you had with the Askren boys since you moved to Madison?
Daily. You know, Ben is our, you know, Ben is our head, RTC coach. So he's involved in the day to day things with the RTC. And obviously we're really, really growing our RTC. It's growing really, really fast. You know, here at the, you know, in a couple of weeks, we're going to have some huge announcements. You know, and we're about our RTC, and Ben is an integral part of it, you know. So I'm in constant communication with Ben, and, he's been awesome for us.
How has he been able to manage, you know, trying to, you know, he's got this UFC stuff going on, which is amazing to follow. I mean, I love the smack talk that Ben, he just brings it. He's just a different guy that we can kind of grab a hold of as a wrestling community. He's got the Beat the Streets coming up. And how is he, some people ask me, like, what is Askren, does he have time to do the RTC stuff? Well, you know, what's exactly happening up there? What's Ben's roles?
Yeah, well, you got to remember, Ben, this is, you know what I mean? The UFC, the Beat the Streets, everything, it all evolves around wrestling, right? So Ben runs his academies. Ben runs our RTC practices. That's what he does for a living. You know what I mean? He doesn't have a job. So Ben runs practices for a living, right? You know what, you get what I'm saying? And you know, there's sometimes we have to work around his schedule or, you know, but he is loyal. He's committed. He does everything that, he said he's going to do in terms of our RTC. And, you know, and the best thing about it is our guys love him. You know, we support him. We love the UFC. He, you know, if we can't watch him live at UFC, we'll all get together and watch him, and support him. And, you know, we our guys wrestle with him, getting him ready for Beat the Streets. And, you know, it's great. It's a great relationship that we have. And, you know, he's, whatever it is, you know, yesterday he had a press conference in Atlanta. for the UFC, and then he was back here at our prospect camp last night. You know what I mean? So he's amazing.
Coach, last hour we were talking about different recruiting things, and we mentioned the transfer portal. Tell me, where Connor Brown and Tristan Morin, that you got those guys, did they come to you via that transfer portal, and what are your thoughts on the implementation?
They did not.
Okay.
They did not, because the transfer portal started in October.
Okay.
So they did not come via the transfer portal. But, you know, I think the transfer portal is changing the game. You know, I don't have an opinion on it yet, whether I like it or not, you know, but it's changing the game, you know, and I think there's going to be a lot of tweaks to it. You know, I think I saw Dick Vitale put something like there's over 800 Division I basketball players in the portal. You know what I mean? That's amazing, right? But it's also good. You know, if guys can't make the team and they want to leave and go somewhere else, I guess I am in favor of that. You know, it's you always want what's best for the student athlete. You know, and, you know, I know here, if anybody ever wants to leave our program, there's no question to ask. You know what I mean? They, you know, that's how University of Wisconsin wants it done. And that's what it is. We want what's best for the student athlete.
The transfer portal is in wrestling. We were talking with Mason Beckman, who's at George Mason, and he also he doesn't know if it's good or bad for small programs type of deal. So I think it's going to be an evolving thing.
The only thing is with the small programs is you're gonna see this a lot where, you know, when I was in the small program, where hopefully, you know, in a small program you're not going to get hopefully you do, but it's hard to get the division. The blue chippers to come right to your program, okay? So you spend 3-4 years really developing a kid, and he gets ranked number one, number two in the country, right? Now, sometimes those kids, if you don't have a good relationship with those kids, or, you know, sometimes if they think the grass is greener in one of these Big Ten schools, you know what I mean? They hear about a Big Ten school, and they let me test the waters, and they put their name in the portal, and then one of these Big Ten schools, you know, calls them and shows them what they have to offer and all that, and they leave, right? That's going to be the downfall of it, but I believe that's on the coach. The coach has to have a relationship with their athletes to where, you know, they don't want to leave. They think they can get it done at the small schools, and vice versa. I think that's one scenario. But I think the scenario that really it should be used for, you know, is if someone's not happy, regardless whether it's playing time, whether it's, you know, they're homesick, whether they're too far from home, whatever their reasoning is, I think that's the other scenario, and that's probably what it was really intended for. And it just takes the politics out of the game of I'm not releasing you to this school, but you can go to this school. Hey, you're in the transfer portal. Anyone can talk to you. Make the best decision.
I think it'll be interesting to see how it evolves, and, you know, whether most coaches like it, dislike it, or what tweaks people, you know, suggest making to it. I want to talk to you real quickly about Evan Wick, if you don't mind. Very, very highly touted recruit coming out of high school. It's obviously, like, this kid's a talent, right? He's an absolute hammer on top. It's hard to get away from him at all. But I think he's been All-American two times in a row now. Talk about the development of him since you've been there and what the future looks like for that kid.
Yeah, Evan, first of all, before we talk about wrestling, he's one of the best people I've ever been around in my life. I absolutely love being around him. He hangs around our complex 24/7, wants to be involved in everything in the program. He's a great leader. He's a great student, you know, and we absolutely love being around him. As far as his development, he's come a long way. You know, we still have a long way to go, right? We took fourth in the NCAAs. You know, I think he can be a national champion. There's no doubt in my mind. He has the skill set to do that. And he's really flourished under our system. We just have to get him to, you know, correct a few things, get a little better here. You know, I obviously on top, everybody thinks he's going to cradle somebody. We just got to get him to transition to a couple of different things, and when he makes a few improvements, I think he's going to be a force to reckon with. You know, his length is no joke. You know, I fool around with him a little bit, and I play around with him, and it's no joke. You know what I mean? It is a very hard style to wrestle with his length and his size and the fact that he's not cutting any weight. He can show up on a one-hour weigh-in and scrap, and, you know, he's unbelievable. He's a great kid, and I think the sky's the limit for him. He's got a future, you know, post-collegiately in the international game. And so I'm excited about how far we can take this kid. And the great thing is he's receptive to everything. He's open-minded, and he works hard, and he just does all the right things. He's an ideal athlete for any kind of program.
Coach, I look at a guy like that, and I see how good he is on the mat, and I see a lot of his strengths. Does freestyle in your opinion, does that really help maybe open up his offense on his feet too in that transition to folk style? Is he one of those kids that can benefit from some extra freestyle time?
Yeah, you know, I agree. Anytime you compete, you'll get better. You know what I mean? I really believe in competing. He loves to compete. You know, he's going to go to the Open. He's going to go to the, you know, he'll hopefully makes the trials. He's going to go to U23s. He loves to compete. And again, once you compete, or the more you compete, I just feel like you learn how to compete. You learn where your strengths are. You learn where to wrestle from. And, yeah, he's on, you know, everybody says he doesn't really open up on his feet a whole bunch, but you got to remember everybody's, you know, comparing him when he wrestles Marinelli. You know, and Marinelli's pretty good at controlling the tie up. Marinelli's pretty good at keeping people off his leg.
That's
you know
a horse,
I mean? But
right?
You look at the, yeah, you look at 90% of Evans' matches, he's got 3, 4, 5 takedowns. You know what I mean? So the thing that everybody gave him a lot of, you know, stuff about clamming up and things like that, well, those were matches against the top 3, 4, 5 guys in the country. His last part of the year was brutal, you know, and he was finding ways to win because he's that good. Does Evan have great attacks? He has great attacks. Can he score and people attack on him? Absolutely. You know, so, he's good on his feet and he's got great attacks and you know you guys know how it is when you're wrestling you know someone that's also very good 1-2 takedowns is a lot
exactly so, and he pinned the kid early in the tournament that he lost 2-for-3 so I mean you know it's margin of error is very thin right there right
so yeah we'd like for him to go out and get 5-6 takedowns in everybody in the country when he's able to do that you know what I mean he's going to win a national title hands down but. You know, to get him there, he understands the mindset. He put it this way, he does not want to go out there and wrestle 0-0, 1-1 matches. That guy's trying to score points.
So a match that comes to my mind if we're talking about Wick and scoring points is Alex Marinelli won at the Big Ten Championships. As a coach, how that match just ended, what was the message to him? I can imagine he was frustrated, I'd imagine. He couldn't get Alex to open up. They weren't calling stalling on him. What was the message from you, Coach?
To keep going, to keep moving forward. We've you know, you look at Alex Marinelli, offensive guy, getting to people's legs the whole third period. You know, I think I went back and you know, there was zero attempts by Marinelli. You know what I mean? He did what he had to do to win. You know, and he kept Wick away. We took a ton of shots, and we were pushing the pace and. You know, we're not going to rely on a referee stalling call. I got a lot of heat from a lot of fans across the country picking top and trying to get stalling calls. That's not what we're doing. We're picking top to try to pin them. You know what I mean? Or we're on our feet. We're trying to score. You know what I mean? And he did a good job of fending us off. But our message to Evan was, you got to keep going, man. You're going to get it. You're going to get to him. You know, you're going to get to him, and you get to him, and you put him down hard, and you win that match. You ride him out there. So keep moving forward. And you know we'll get them when it counts. That's kind of when it you know. And obviously we didn't get to wrestle them at the national tournament, but you know I believe in you know in the next 2 years these two are going to wrestle in a very, very important match somewhere down the road. And that's where we're looking to really make sure we impose our will and go get a win.
Coach, there's a lot of talk about a heavyweight in the neighboring state of Minnesota this year as a freshman. You had a pretty good freshman heavyweight yourself. Who really won some clutch matches for you in duels and, like you said, an All-American as a freshman. Can you talk about his development and just him as a person?
First of all, too, as a person, unbelievable spirit, great kid. Love being around him. He's one heck of an athlete. You know, he could have played football here at Wisconsin. So he's always been a good kid, right? He's a highly touted recruit. But this kid's something special. You know, when he goes out and shows his athleticism, I think he's one of the best athletes at the heavyweight division. But when he goes out there and actually shows his athleticism and goes out and scores points, he's unbelievable. You know, we kind of got caught up into, you know, wanting to ride everybody at the end of the year and, you know, against the good kids. And, I think that when he goes out and gets a takedown, he's unbeatable, you know, and, we're fired up. We, you know, that kid from Minnesota is a great talent, you know, and that's the goal. That's who we're reaching for. And, you know, we just got to keep getting better and improving. And, you know, you got to remember he's a freshman too. Our guy's a freshman, 19 years old. He's going to develop in the next 3 years and excited to see how far he can take it.
Coach, earlier in this interview, I mentioned Connor Brown. I know he was with you at your previous stop and comes over. He's wrestling for you this year. Saw him earlier in the season. Did he get banged up late in the season, or what happened at 120?
Yeah, first of all, CB is one of my favorites. You know, I got an unbelievable relationship with Connor. And he did. He went through, he had a terrible, nasty ankle injury suffered against Boise. And then he came back from that. He wound up getting a pretty nasty head injury, that we had to deal with for a while. And then, for some personal reasons, he dealing with the injuries, he decided to kind of take a leave of absence. So we're, CB's our guy. We love him. We're in constant contact with him. I've got an unbelievable relationship with him. And, I'm hoping the future turns out great for him. And, he's able to, be able to get on the mat at some point later in the future.
Coach, one more I want to ask you about. I mentioned him earlier. Tristan Moran obviously wrestled at Oklahoma State, kind of had a tough job cracking that lineup with Boo Llewellyn and other guys in that program, but he always competed well. So he comes to you. Was he classified as a junior, sophomore, senior last year? And tell me about his development under you.
He is a junior. He has one more year. He'll be a senior. And I'll tell you, if anybody doesn't know Tristan Moran, I encourage you to get to know this guy. An unbelievable kid, great to be around, just one of those guys that if you're in a room with him, you want to sit next to him and listen to him talk. He's a great chef. He's like our team chef. Every night he's cooking meals for everybody, and he's taking cooking classes. He's gonna, he's the next Emeril, I think, in terms of cooking. But
hey, I'm from New Orleans. We know about Emeril.
Yeah, so he's all over it. Moran's all over it. But we love this guy. And when we got him, you got to remember, he has never been a full-time starter. I think he told me he'd never wrestled in a one-hour weigh-in, meaning all he's competed in is tournament. So for real, you look at this guy, and you're kind of dealing with almost a freshman-type guy mentality-wise. And from when he came to us to the end of the year, it's been nothing but a huge transformation. I think the sky's the limit for Tristan. He's going to be a force next year. He's had some great wins. He was a little inconsistent for us. He beat Lee from Penn State. He pins McKee one time, and then he takes some bad losses. So, and again, you're really looking at him as a first-year starter. So we're excited about the experience he got. We're excited to get him back out there. And, he's going to be with us all summer training. And, we didn't get this guy on campus till late August. So, we have a long time with him now, and his senior season's been real successful, I feel.
Coach, I wanted to touch on this here and make sure we can kind of clear the air. So on social media, there's I'm sure you saw, obviously, there's tweets out there about Bono no longer being in Wisconsin. What's going on up Wisconsin? Not sure where any of this came from, but can you kind of squash a bug on this that you're not going anywhere?
Yeah, I'm not going anywhere. I'm here, right? I'm not going anywhere. I've got great administration. I don't know what's going on with all the word out. There's a lot of people that think they know a lot of information. We do have some things going on, but everything is great here. The program's in great hands. Our administration is unbelievable. We're moving forward. Rumors are rumors, right? We'll get through it all. And I don't even know how to answer those kind of questions.
Yeah.
To tell you the truth, except I'm here. There's no talks of me going anywhere, and we're excited about moving forward in the coming years for sure.
Well, I kind of figured if you're willing to come on the show, you're still going to be you're still coaching. So
right.
I just
right.
want to
it's unfortunate that you've got people out there that don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it is what it is. We deal with that. That's the reality of social media, right? You have you can get behind a computer or phone, and you can tweet out whatever you want when you get angry at somebody, and then it can take off. You know what I mean? And so it is what it is. I'm fired up because those are we work harder, and we're gonna be here for a long time, and we're gonna produce All Americans and national champions, and grow this RTC where we have world medalists and Olympic medalists, and we're gonna try to work as hard as we can to be the best we can and develop our student athletes.
Well, it's a testament to your talent that even people feel the need to start talking about you and what you do, Coach. You've always made time for us. You even made time for me next to your bus in Stillwater several years ago, and I always appreciate that.
Anytime, I appreciate what you guys do for the sport.
All right, Coach, we are going to head to break here. Appreciate you coming on.
All right, have a great day, guys.
All right, so Chris Bono is definitely still in Wisconsin, had a great year. I think when Chris Bono left South Dakota State, guys, and we knew that that he was going to bring the passion, and social media has been is completely changes how fans interact with, you know, the sport. Nothing against South Dakota State right now, but and they were pounding social media. The fans were just you gravitate to, you know, coach does like this Monday jump around thing, and you're able to, as a fan, get connected to that coach. And that's the missing piece, I think, at a lot of programs, and reason why maybe there's not a whole lot of butts in seats in some of these programs. That's not a problem in Wisconsin anymore.
And maybe the guy at South Dakota State, who I know is a talented wrestler and a good coach,
Damon Hahn.
Yeah, maybe he grows into that position, and you start seeing, you know, some better results there. But I can tell you that all you got to do is look and see what they were able to do last year versus this year, and it gives you an idea of what the Bono effect was like in Brookings.
Yeah, we talked about this, Brad. Like, you know, as Brad's producing shows and trying to find wrestling content out there, you can tell which programs, when there's a new coach that comes in, of who sees the value in it and who's connected. I mean, look at Iowa State. Their social media just went through a whole nother level, and you got to imagine. Well, one, they made a huge commitment to Kevin Dresser as far financially, so they have to make it work. There's just not like, oh, just let him just coach, and you know, they had to have that support up there. But you know, to see programs not even promoting themselves on social media where everybody's at is just it's frustrating.
You've got to set yourself apart, and you've got to draw some attention to your program. Not only to get butts in the seats and have fans watch, because that kind of helps your program, but also to get attention from recruits, right? Like to be able to bring in the type of athletes you want to bring in. I mean, it's vital now for success. Like it or not, we're in a social media age. We're not in the 1993 anymore.
So at Skull Sparks put out a tweet here a couple days ago. His college wrestling Twitter accounts had the most interactions during the NCAA championships. Who do you think's at the top? This would be like retweets, favorites, interaction with fans. I mean, who do you think's got the best Twitter game?
It's a good question.
Brad?
I'm off Twitter, but I'm going to guess Iowa.
No.
I'm going to guess Penn State.
Penn State. Which surprised me.
It is, because they don't put out a lot of content.
No, they do tweet out. Like, I follow them, and they tweet results of their stuff, and a lot of people favorite it. And, you know, that's the, you know, the linchpin program right now. So it doesn't surprise me. I mean, there are a couple of other programs that I know are really active in social media, but that's the one I would have guessed.
Okay, so I'm gonna read off our let's do the top ten. Penn State had 50,000 interactions. Number one, Rutgers, number two, Ohio State, number three, Iowa, four, Virginia Tech, five, Iowa State, six, Okie State, seventh, Mizzou, eight, and UNI, ninth, and Nebraska, 10.
And I just want to throw this out there for you guys, for any of you that are wrestling fans, that is another good place to just see results. And if you want to really quickly go see how a duel went out, you got it on like different websites like the Open Mat and all these other sites where you can also get it. But I follow a lot of dual results from Twitter feeds. Just open Twitter accounts and go through. And just about every one of those programs that you just mentioned, Tony, I can go see any of their duels and see how every one of their guys matched up that day and what they did.
How about this? Three Iowa schools in the top 10.
It once again shows you what a hotbed wrestling is in the state and how big it is, right?
Is it a hotbed, or just are people in Iowa
bored?
Iowa kind of gets this dumb thing. Oh, well, just a bunch of farmers that don't know how to use social media. Well, clearly they do, right? they're in the top 10. But yeah, social media game.
Panther train, baby.
They had each one of these kind of had a story, right? I mean, obviously Penn State, the number one team, they dominate. That's not going to change for some time, even though, you know, Jeff Murphy thinks Iowa's going to knock them off next year. Rutgers,
two
national champs. Ohio State, I'm trying to think what was the storyline there this year. I mean,
you Miles Martin, really? But he lost. And what kind of reactions did you get from that? Like surprises, you know, all kinds of people responding to Miles Martin getting beat as well, right? So you're going to see reactions to positive and negative things on Twitter. So even like the Ohio State haters are going to start liking those tweets when Miles Martin gets knocked off, or anybody that has another guy in that weight class, like they're going to start liking. So that counts as part of your interactions.
Well, either way, there's not a lot of interactions. 50,000 for our team. I feel like it should be a lot more than that. I was reading also too. This year was a down year for ESPN viewers. Did anybody else see that? Like the viewership for people that were watching was like at a 6-year low. I mean, I'm throwing just a number out there, but it was not good numbers this year.
But part of me wonders if that's why it's important for us to get some parity back in the sport, right? Like, as wrestling enthusiasts, we like it, but you know, it was quite obvious kind of the team trophy was locked up long beforehand. And, you know, officially locked up early Saturday morning, like in the Conte semifinals. So part of me wonders if that has something to do with it as well.
Yeah, I mean, the parity and the fact that you can, you know, get the matches right away, you know, online. Maybe people aren't watching live. Maybe those numbers aren't, you know, trying to find match replays on ESPN, very difficult. That's why you've got Track Wrestling and Flow. They've got the matches that you can purchase through their subscriptions right away. Maybe people are just waiting for the matches to happen. I don't know what goes into that. I mean, it's easier to watch online than ever before. Every tablet, your phone. I mean, the online numbers have to be much greater than probably the TV numbers, right?
Not only that, hit set. There's a lot of ways to watch it off the grid. So
There's two Facebook pages I know that had people just, you know.
It was I watched with several thousand other people that first round on Facebook.
Wow. So along the same lines, right? Like next year, gonna be where, right? Up in Minneapolis, and they're gonna have it the finals, or they're gonna have it in the football stadium.
Yeah.
So you're gonna have a huge, huge crowd. You're probably gonna set all kinds of attendance records for the national tournament, but what's it going to do for the viewership if you got more and more people at the tournament?
I think the numbers are going to go way down. If they put 70,000 people at the bank, U.S. Bank Stadium up in Minnesota.
That's 55,000 that might have been watching otherwise. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, I don't know. It's going to be very interesting to see, and it's going to set the tone for the wrestling NCAA championships. If they can put in, you know, 70,000 people per session in that thing, dude, I'm just really, everyone's concern is how it's going to look. Tony Rotundo put some stuff out there of the kind of the mat ideas of what they will do. Right now, on the first day, all eight mats are like put together, but they've been in like hockey arenas. So being in an NFL stadium, they're looking at possibly spreading them out throughout the field and having gaps in between the mats, and I don't like that.
I don't either, because I feel like if you're on one end, like you, even when they have them bunched together, like I'd listen to the Iowa radio broadcast, and Ironside's like, he's so far down on that other end, it's kind of hard to see, and so he's kind of straining to see what's going on, or you know what this guy's doing on that mat. Well, you start putting gaps, then you're really only going to get to see, you know, maybe three or four of them. The other stuff may be out of sight, so you may have to depend on like a, you know, a Jumbotron or some kind of scoreboard or something just to be able to see what's going on.
Yeah, there were some pictures. I threw a Twitter picture up from the Final Four of the basketball championships, and guy didn't even have upper bowl seats. He had like the lower bowl clear up, and though just the way. So in hockey arenas, they're more like vertical seating, right? They go up at a different angle. Football is more like just a gradual, so like you're farther and farther away. And
I don't like the fact that they always do that with basketball. It also throws off the depth perception for shooters and everything else. I mean, you're putting it in a football arena and you're asking to play the most important two games of the year, like on a completely different stage and backdrop, right?
Yeah, I think if the NCAA, and I haven't looked into the ticket prices because the lower bowl's already sold out for one. As long as they accommodate the prices for the distance, I think you're not going to have an issue with, you know, fans being like upset. I just don't want fans to like buy those back row tickets and be like, you know, that view is horrible. Like, you get what you pay for, right? So if you have a crappy seat up on the upper deck, don't complain about the view being bad because you didn't fork over another $200 or whatever it is to get, you know, lower seats.
At the same time, if it's somebody's first ever tournament going and they don't really know what that view is going to be like and they get kind of caught in a really bad spot, I would hate for somebody to have that be their their only taste of what live action in the sport is like. However, that place, you see how riled up they get going into sessions or whatever? That place is going to be as loud as it is for any Vikings football game, probably.
Oh, heck, I don't know about Vikings. Unless you get up there and you blow the horn.
Yeah, I was about to say, minus the little horn that they
that
do.
That is a super cool thing, though. I mean, I'm a Cowboys fan, and I went to a Vikings game, non-Cowboys game. And, dude, that stadium is fun as heck. The town is, it's going to be sick. People are going to be, there's going to be a lot of people that have had too much fun in between sessions up at Minnesota. So be on the lookout for that. All right, we got to take a quick time out here. We're going to be back talking with a Joey Edessa, odds maker for wrestling and MMA. Find out where the heck are we heading with this? Is it, you know, has it been a positive, negative thing? You know, have books been making money or losing money on the sport of wrestling? Not everybody out in Vegas carries lines for NCAA wrestling. Will that change now that we've got some more people that are, in tune with, actual, the spreads, and it's making it easier to figure it out? I don't know. We'll find out from Joey right here after the short timeout on Takedown Radio.
Des Moines Sports Station, 1460 KXNO.
There's a reason people keep coming back to Casey's General Stores. Maybe it's because we've been serving communities like yours for over 50 years. Maybe it's the smiles and friendly conversation you'll find here. Or maybe it's because we continue to spend the extra time preparing our made-from-scratch pizza the way you want it. Right now, get a large Supreme pizza for only $13.99. Casey's, famous for pizza. Not valid with any other offer.
What's up, guys? I want to tell you about a new product that I am extremely excited about. It is the Pure and Clean Sports Skin Defense. It comes in a 16-ounce spray bottle, and it comes in a little bitty travel size spray bottle. I have one of these, throw it in my bag, go straight to the gym. A lot of these gyms I train at, whether it be boxing, wrestling, kickboxing, grappling, strength and conditioning, it all has bacteria floating around. They all have viruses floating around. They all have fungus floating around. And the last thing you want is to get a fungus, a virus, get sick, any kind of wounds that are going to turn into any kind of skin infections to take you off of the mat. Every single second that you spend off the mat or out of the gym is 1 second that you're wasting. So Pure and Clean Sports came up with a amazing solution to give you the right amount of protection on your skin. You spray it right on your skin. Stay pure. Stay clean. Checking them out. PureAndCleanSports.com.
Wrestling fans, keep current with Tom, TheOpenMat.com. Tom is your number one source for news, predictions, previews, and stories about your sport. Be the first to see rankings and analysis when you sign up to receive Tom's free newsletter. Take 20% off the price of Tom's Prime subscription when you enter the code RADIO20. America's favorite wrestling news source is TheOpenMat.com. MMA and wrestling fans, Barbarian Apparel has all the new gear for you and your team. All the hot colors, cool patterns are now available in one spot, barbarianapparel.com. From two-piece tops and bottoms, fight shorts or compression shorts, to singlets for men and women, Barbarian offers price breaks on quantities too. Barbarian is a worldwide leader in wrestling gear, including their very much in-demand BA backpack. The Barbarian team can now also host your online store. Check out our friends at barbarianapparel.com.
1460 KXNO.
Good morning, wrestling fans. Welcome. This is Takedown Radio. Appreciate you tuning in every Saturday from 9 to 11. Make sure that you subscribe to the podcast version of the show. You go back and listen to Mason Beckman, George Mason, assistant coach. Great conversation in regards to George Mason. We talked a little bit about George Mason, but a hot topic right now is illegal recruiting in the wrestling world. It's a very real thing, and at some point, someone's gonna be set an example, and you hope it's not a high profile coach, right? But if the higher the stakes, sometimes people take a risk that they probably shouldn't have done, and at some point in time, someone's gonna get pissed off, and they're gonna make an example of one of these coaches. So I hope it doesn't happen to some of our favorites, but I mean it's one of those things.
I have a question for you because I feel like. I remember somebody telling me a story about Oklahoma State, like in the 90s, maybe early 90s, being on probation for a little bit. Is that the last college wrestling program that had any kind of probationary?
I don't know. Yeah, I should look. I'll look that up on Monday. When the last one was? I'm sure Jason Bryant would know right away. he's got all those facts. All right, this segment is brought to you by Adidas. Do you need new wrestling shoes at a great price? Visit AdidasWrestling.com and click on the sale tab. While you are there, check out the accessories tab for t-shirts, hats, hoodies, bags, ear guards, and much more. Adidas Wrestling has it all. Adidas Wrestling, create your own success. Now, and also, Takedown Radio fans can get a 20% discount when shopping at AdidasWrestling.com. Use the promo code TD20. Our good friends at Adidas. All right, let's get to this. I've been wanting to, you know, we talked about it throughout the season, you know, being able to gamble on wrestling, positives and negatives on a weekly basis. NCAA championships could be, you know, we've been able to do it for a few years now, but the idea of having it daily, you know, a daily duel where, you know, you can gamble on the weekend is something that we haven't had. But Joey Edessa with MMA Odds on Twitter, you can give him a follow. He's been setting lines for wrestling for a while, and people, it's kind of been going under the radar. It's been kind of like a one of the best kept secrets for people that are in that world, right, Joey?
Yeah. Good morning, guys. I was listening to you guys speak earlier, and some really interesting stuff there. It made me wonder if we had enough time to go down every avenue here. But yeah, I've been putting these numbers up going back, heck, probably 2002, offshore. You know, in the sports books they cater to. Mostly North and, North and Central American markets.
2002,
yeah. I mean, I actually have some, it was almost over before it started. An interesting anecdote. In 2000, I think it was 2003 or 2005, somewhere around there, like, I had offered the NCAA wrestling odds because I'd been a NCAA, I'd been a wrestling fan. I'd wrestled as a kid, high school, college a little bit. And, with the Ultimate Fighting Championships and the growth of MMA, a lot of the early guys, Mark Coleman, Kevin Randleman, who else, Hoist Alger, Kevin Jackson, Don Fry, anyways, with the wrestling being integrated into mixed martial arts and the success they had, I really thought that there'd be a good opportunity to create a market for fans of wrestling because, if you poll wrestling fans, I mean, they're not watching March Madness. And well, March Madness with the basketball is a billion-dollar industry. Wrestling, I mean, it wasn't even on TV back then. I mean, the NCAA finals, might be on. But now with the streaming platforms and the wave of information that the Internet provides, it's become more accessible. And with that, people will bet on anything if they can watch it. But more importantly, like the wrestling fans, they just never had anything to wager on. Like, they had pools and things like that. I mean, I remember in the 80s being at, junior nationals and things like that, where we would actually, like, we'd be betting each other who'd win the finals, back in, I could just start saying names. I mean, with Jeff Prescott, one junior nationals, we were out there with New York, and, you're betting on your teammates, which really is kind of, not on this scale, of course, but, little things like that. So anyways, in 2003 or 2005, I had pitched, it must have been 2005. It was after the 2004 Olympics because we offered Olympic wrestling odds. And in 2005, I think it was in Budapest, I put up the world championships. And I remember this only because it was almost catastrophic for me. I put up the 85 kilograms, and I don't remember the guy's name, but there was a Russian entry and there was a Belarus entry. And the reason I'm telling you this is, like I said, it was almost over before it started. I had pitched to offer this stuff at one of the largest offshore sports books in the world at the time. And they said, okay, can you beat it? And I said, yeah, sure, of course I can beat it. I wouldn't offer something I couldn't beat. Because a lot of times sports books will offer something as what they call like a loss leader. They'll just, like the Academy Awards, they put it out there. They don't take high wages on. They try to get new business in the door so it carries over to other sports. So anyway, the 85 kilogram Greco-Roman entry for Russia, I don't know how I made the mistake, but I didn't have him listed, which made him fall into the category of the field, which would be all the other unlisted entries. And he was a 2004 Olympic champ. I had remember, I saw that in hindsight about 3 hours before the event went off, and the field was 40-1.
Oh,
we had,
oh,
yeah,
no.
We had bitten, Yeah, I mean, we were only taking $250 limits. And we had written probably about 30, I don't know, probably about $3,000, $3,100, something like that. About, figure, $3,000 worth of wagers on this Russian. Well, it was, I mean, that's $120,000 if this guy gets there. And it was just, I mean, I tell you, like I said, I didn't say anything. But I was physically sick.
Sweating. Yeah.
I didn't eat. I mean, it was like I was cutting weight or something. I mean, I didn't eat. I didn't want to watch anything. I was irritable until that thing got over with. And the Belarus guy beat him. And like I said, that's one memory that I'll never forget. And it cooled my jets a little bit. And it made me realize, you know, like an international, dealing like the NCAAs to the United States people, you know, like international, you know, people over in Italy and the UK, like, they're not really looking to wager on the United, you know, the U.S. NCAA folk-style championships. However, they will take your eyes out if you make a mistake on an international bout. I mean, you would think, oh, well, there's not that big of a market for it. There really is, you know, there's a decent market for it. And if you make a mistake, they will, you know, they will call you to the table. I mean, you will get turned upside down.
So you've been doing this since 2002, and you know what? I guess has it grown? Like, have you, you know, at the time, like, you could do like money line bets, I'm imagining, and then there's, you know, you could pick three winners, and then the field bet for the NCAA championship. You know, is there room to do like a spread on an individual matchup, over unders and scored points? You know, how far can this thing go here in the sport of wrestling?
You know, I think it has a lot of potential, but the problem is you need people behind the scenes that know both sides, you know, they can recognize both sides of the table. Like, they, I guess you would have to say, like, you know, football. You know, you look on a Sunday and you have the John Elway and Dan Marino and these guys telling you their, you know, who they like in these games. But when you attach a number to it, you know, when you, New England, sure, New England's going to win. They're a lock. You know, I hear that word lock all the time. You know, but you use, like, you put a number on it, and they're lucky if they hit 50%. And that's the thing with the wrestling. You know, with these, for instance, Dakey and Taylor, back in, I think it was, what, 2013 when they wrestled in the finals? It was a one-point match. And, you know, I offered that 1.5. I offered, I had Kyle favored 1.5. Plus 260. So if you wanted to take plus 1.5 on, and this was the first time that I integrated the point spreads into the individual matches, I believe. Anyway, it was the first significant bout, and everybody laid like 3-1 on Taylor, plus the 1.5. And they bet Kyle plus the 1.5. See, I confused myself. Plus the 260 for the plus money, because they didn't want to lay 3-1 on Taylor getting the 1.5. And it turned out really well for us because we won by one.
Yeah.
So nobody, you know, nobody cashed on Kyle. But so there is room. And in wrestling, I mean, I don't think wrestling has a lot of the problems that the other sports may have. Like, I'm sure it could happen. But as far as the integrity, like, I don't see somebody, you know, kind of sandbagging a wrestling match because there's so much at stake. And I think it's the responsibility of the odds makers and the bookmakers, the people that are taking the wagers on these bets, to recognize irregularities and to not put up a number on something that, you know, that, I don't want to say that's not competitive, because that would be the wrong, you know, that'd be the wrong, you know, the wrong explanation, because Bone Nichols wrestling, I mean, how many guys did he pin this year? How many guys did he just, you know, totally wipe out? You know, if you put up 7.5 on Bo, sure, he could, you know, he'll win by 6, but his team, you know, he's representing his team, he's representing his family, he's representing, you know, he's representing everything. I mean, there's not a, you know, a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. This is about legacy and things like that. So I don't think that we have the problems where, like, in a basketball game, and, you know, there's 5 guys on the court and one guy might miss a couple layups or something. And that does, I mean, people, all the time, people cry foul and this happens, and that happens very rarely. I mean, sure, it does happen, but, you know, people know and it gets recognized. And I don't think wrestling presents those problems. So I'm of the opinion that I think it would be good for the sport, But I know that there would be, I'm sure there's a ton of opposition on the other side of the table that says, hey, look, Joe, this is really, you know, this is not the right thing to do.
I think it has positives and negatives for the sport of wrestling. The positive that I see away from it is, man, how fun would have been at the Big Ten Championships is, if you know, if you can put money on anything, people are going to be intrigued by it, I think. If you're not a fan of the sport, like, that's just, it's been proven on everything. Like, the Academy Awards, like, you put money on, okay, I'm going to watch the Academy Awards.
Yeah,
right?
I never watch it unless there's money.
Right? So, I just, where we're going with this is, you know, I say the spread is 6 with Nickel, and then, you know, there's 30 seconds left on the clock, and he lets a guy up at the end, or he just gives up a takedown at the end. What that does is people are gonna be like, oh man, he's shaving points or whatnot. But I think that's also fun for the bettors, because there are those bad beats at the buzzer, like in football and basketball and stuff. But that's what keeps people coming back to and putting money into Vegas, because things like that happen, and either on the right or the wrong side of it, you know. And I think that's what is why sports is such so popular, is because those things do happen. Sorry, Mike, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, you're fine. We're talking about individual matchups and stuff, you know, and he mentions Dake Taylor. I'm sitting here thinking, like, how spot on were some of these odds this year? Like, I remember us talking about Fix Siriano and even Fix Lysak on Fix's very first weekend in the, you know, in the sport. And if this guy's the one that made those odds, like, I'm impressed.
I took this year off. The 2019, those were not my numbers. Up until the end of 2018, I was working, and I decided I was going to take 2019 off. So I set this NCAA tournament out and actually enjoyed it first.
What I think, what I as a media person would enjoy is a radio show, or, you know, there's fantasy podcasts and radio shows just breaking down the actual odds. I mean, there you could be, okay, Bo Nickel's going to win this match, but can he cover? Like, that's a completely different conversation, you know? Like, based on who he's wrestling, some guys are more defensive, and they don't give up points easily. So, you know, say you're Sharp out there, you know, he's going to know that defensive wrestler is not going to give up points, you know, on the bottom, he's not going to give up, you know. So I think that's just a whole different world of the sport that we just don't get to talk about, and I think it would be great. Do you think that in wrestling, is it good to have like a weekly, you know, weekly weekend lines, or is it something better where we should just stick to the NCAA championships?
Well, there's a couple of things with the weekly individual matchups, and one problem, you know, it's not a problem from the wagering and the sportsbook perspective, but for the wrestlers, you know, you mentioned Bo Nickel. I mean, what's going to happen once it's integrated? Once these odds are regularly offered on some of these dual meets, for instance, you know, something I think is a negative is you're going to see, you know, Bo Nickel lets the guy, you know, gives up an escape or a late takedown, wins the match by 7 points. Maybe it was a 7.5 point favorite. Now the Penn State fans start booing. That I think is a bit of a problem, because they're not booing because he won, they're booing because he didn't cover the spread.
Yeah.
And it's, you know what I mean? I just think that's an entirely different animal that some of these guys will have to deal with. And, you know, those guys at that level, I mean, they're so mentally tough that, you know, these things might, you know, they probably shouldn't affect them, and they, you know, I won't say that they wouldn't know what the number is on them, you know, because fighters all the time ask me, hey, what's the price, you know, what are the odds on me? You know, how much, what do I get if I, you know, how much, what is it pay to win, whether the favorite or why am I the underdog? I mean, I get those questions a lot. And I think that does present a problem. But weekly, I think you could have, if a good organized, structured weekly prices on dual meets would work. I heard you guys mention something earlier about, you know, like when a team's up by 21 or something like that and they put their backups in. Or, you know, for instance, you know, I could see an instance in wrestling where, you know, the team has a comfortable lead and maybe their last two matches, their heavyweight or something might be a little dinged up and they might sit them. Well, those things are going to happen. They're going to happen in football. They're going to happen in basketball. They're going to happen in all sports. where guys might not be in there, be in the lineup. And that's something that you have to recognize before. And I think that, you know, I know I did. You know, I was pretty dialed in and tuned in with people, you know, trying to, information is the key. You know, not so much information, but information and then knowing what to do with the information. Because, I mean, if you give a guy too much information, he'll go crazy, he'll overanalyze, and he'll go broke. I mean, happens all the time with other sports. So I think that, you know, I think there is, to go back, and I'm long-winded here, I think that I think there is an opportunity here for the United States, you know, with gambling becoming legal in more and more states, I think there's an opportunity for some of these sports books to open their doors and open, you know, create and offer NCAA wrestling lines, weekly tournaments, things like that. You know, but there, it's difficult. It's not an easy thing because you're also going to have regional bias. And, I mean, you spoke on it earlier with social media. I mean, you're, you know, I, if you would ask me, and I anticipated maybe asking me, saying, hey, what states bet the most? Iowa, New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania. I mean, they all, I mean, there's a lot of Ohio, a lot of money comes offshore for those. And those are some of your higher, you know, more engaged social media schools, as you said before, right? Didn't you say that Rutgers, Penn State, I think you said Rutgers, Penn State, a couple Iowa schools and things like that were very active on social media. And that transitions because, you know, once the word gets out and there's not, you know, there wasn't a huge push for the NCAA wrestling. It was a kind of a niche market for guys and, you know, people that were in the know, I guess, that were on social media and that followed those sorts of things that wanted action would be able to find it. But overall, there wasn't a big push for it. And I don't think, by any means, I don't think that the school should promote the gambling. I mean, that's another headache.
Yeah.
You know, the wrestlers, you know, they don't belong betting on themselves. I mean, but, I mean, if you go to Ohio State, there's no question that a whole bunch of the students and the alumni and everybody are betting on the, you know, the football, the basketball, and so on. So you will have that. But, yeah, I think you have to keep it, you know, you just have to be responsible.
So
if you offer it for too high of limits, you know, you're going to have a problem because at some point everybody seems to have a price. And it might not be $250 limit, of course, but when you get up there and, you know, if you were offering this stuff for, you know, $10,000 limits, you know, that's a month's pay. That's all right money for people.
So you told us about the Belarus guy pulling you out of the fire, and you told us about cashing in on the Kyle Dake David Taylor match. Can you remember an odd that you put down that you were pretty confident in, and then it turned out that it wasn't, like the bet went really the other way and it didn't come out so well for you in the end?
You know, I'm more of an optimist, so I don't think about, like, I turn the page on the bad beats. But there have been some. I mean, anybody that says they don't lose is lying to themselves. You know, I mean, we've had some tough goes. I tell you, when Ohio State beat Penn State in the team race, what year was it? It was fairly recent.
About three, four, I think it was 2014, because I think they had won four in a row.
Yeah, I mean, we had a good amount. People would bet Ohio State pretty good. You know, I don't even remember. I think Penn State was maybe a 2.5 point, 2.5 point favorite in the overall standings. I mean, that's just one of recent memory. You know, I had to go back 3 years, but.
Yeah, I wonder about, because I start thinking about different matches, and so one of the ones that comes back to me, I'm kind of not surprised he won, but it was kind of a back and forth, so I think back to that Darian Caldwell-Britt Metcalf championship match.
That was awesome.
When Caldwell just greased him, right? Like,
what year was that? I mean,
that would have been around 2009, I think.
2009. Let me look here because I pulled up a couple of things to, if I, you know, I know that was actually good for us. Well, when I say us, I'm saying collectively for the offshores that did offer it, that worked out well for us. Now you said Caldwell, right?
Yeah, Darian Caldwell.
And who did he beat? That he beat
Metcalf in the finals.
Okay, all right. I want to say, you know, I think Lincoln McIlravey. Is that another?
That's an Iowa guy, yep. That's been a while ago, though.
Yeah, no, that was quite some time ago. I mean, I remember a bad beat coming at with one of his, you know, did he lose in the finals? Like I said, my memory on the losses is not as clear as some of those where I just, you know, I mean, I hypothetically, you cheat death, you remember, you know. But that was tough.
I can't imagine you remember all the good and the bad beats. What I do know in that world is you just move on to the next day. So you can follow Joey at MMA Odds. He's always talking wrestling. He didn't do odds this year, but it sounds like hopefully he's gonna be coming back this year for next season. But UFC stuff, he's dialed into that. So if you want to give him a follow at MMA Odds, you can get all that action. So Joey, appreciate you coming on and spend some time here on Takedown Radio.
Hey, thanks guys. I hope that I enlighten you guys a little bit to the wrestling and the odds and stuff.
Well, I'm hoping that it picks up for fans and just that world of things that we can maybe bring in some fans. So we'll see what happens in the coming years. But I'm supportive of it. But some people definitely are. All right, that's been Takedown Radio here on the Saturday morning. We had Chris Bono on, Mason Beckman. We just got done with Joey Odessa, the odds maker for wrestling and UFC. This has been a great show here. Thanks for listening. You can get the podcast version of the show up
immediately. In about 3 minutes.
Yeah, Bradley will have that up for you, so make sure you like and subscribe that so you can get us on the go every single Saturday. All right, thanks for listening to Takedown Radio.